Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Dakota Political Junkies join us at this time every Wednesday. Today, we welcome Denise Ross from Rapid City, Jonathan Ellis from Sioux Falls. Denise, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you.
Jonathan, thanks for being here as well.
Hi, Lori.
Where do you want to start, Denise? I think you came back from the Dusty Johnson campaign kickoff. Do you want to give us the highlights of that event?
I was there, and I'll also note that Kevin Hooster was there, who writes the blog on the online page, so he will have his own take on there as well. It was pretty well attended for an 8 a.m. campaign kickoff, and Dusty is nothing if not a happy warrior on the campaign trail. Like, he kind of takes to it like a fish to water, and Dusty is just one of these people who loves people, who loves to be out there talking with them and getting to know them, and really, really thrives in that environment. He's got a great sense of humor, so that helps. But the other political junkie who was there was Seth Tupper from the Rapid City Journal, and he and I were talking about that. And I said, you know, I think he's going to do better at the retail politics than Chantel Krebs will. Not that she's not good, but he's just extraordinary at it. And he said, yeah, and I don't know if that's going to be enough in a Republican primary, because Chantel Krebs is going to the right, and it appears that, you know, her intention is to be the candidate furthest to the right. And so Seth's take was that might be what it takes to win in a Republican primary, is to be as far to the right as you can be on these issues that span, you know, social issues, fiscal issues, all these other, you know, different positions. And so I think it's going to be a very interesting primary to watch, to see how this shapes up.
Denise, did you get a sense, other than his just general, you know, comfort and ability to meet people and hear what they have to say, did you get a sense of what he's basing his campaign on? Are there topics that you think will come up?
Well, yeah, he's talking about finding solutions to problems, practical solutions to problems, working together. I think you heard on that news report, because Lee Strubinger was there too. It was just an all-star cast from the political junkies. He's saying you can come out and run this cynical campaign and criticize and craft this kind of bitter message, but that's just not Dusty Johnson. He's an optimist. He's coming out saying, and one of the things that I remember him saying was, if you think politics can be fun again, I'm your candidate. he's just, you know, out there talking about how do we actually make Congress work for the people. He's all, you know, and he's hitting a lot of the Republican conservative high notes, returning power to the states and local municipal governments. I've got a postcard here that he handed out. There's pro-life is on the list. Pro-Second Amendment is on the list. Lifelong conservative Republican. You know, he's hitting those notes too, but his tone is just ultimately positive and optimistic. And if anybody who's known Dusty in his political career in this state, I can't see him running any other kind of a campaign.
Jonathan, have you been paying attention to what Dusty is up to and how this might start to play out?
Yeah, I mean, I have been a little bit. You know, I think Denise nails it, that where Dusty's strength is going to be the retail politics. And one of his strengths is that he's been sort of this longtime advisor for years now of the teenage Republican group. And so a lot of young, you know, teenage Republicans are now older, have grown up being a supporter of Dusty. They know Dusty well. So that gives him sort of, you know, as a guy who had as a public utilities commissioner, if you went to one of his parades, he'd have a ton of people there. And you'd just be kind of amazed at why would a bunch of people be, you know, campaigning for a public utilities commissioner. But there's a lot of loyalty, you know, lot of loyalty among these teenage Republicans that have come up over the years with Dusty. So I think that gives him, for a guy who, you know, I mean, a public utilities commissioner is not a, you know, a high profile statewide seat, but for, you know, he has sort of a base out there that really exceeds his elective office in the past. So, you know, I think it'll be an interesting contest.
And Denise, I'm wondering about the Chantel Krebs and Marty Jackley appearance at a rally with William Federer in Rapid City, and some of the heat they've been taking for that. But, you know, they're not talking about it. We don't know what they thought of the event, how long they stayed. There seem to be different answers to that. Do you think that plays into or will play into what Chantel Krebs's message will be?
Well, and this, it does overlap with what we were just talking about on running in a Republican primary. reading those reports, it appears that there was a Republican dinner that they were in attendance at, and this event was piggybacked on that dinner, and they went over and said hello to some people. This Family Heritage Alliance is a very conservative, I'd say primarily socially conservative group, they hosted this group that is characterized by others as a hate group of Muslims. They deny that. The group says, we're not a hate group, we're your love group. They want to convert Muslims to Christians is the way they quoted in the paper. Exactly the nature of that group, I'm not familiar with them. I didn't attend the events. I didn't hear what they had to say. But I think we're all familiar with this overall debate and this lingering idea that somehow Sharia law is ready to take over our system, which I just don't understand, where that's coming from. I've not seen any real actual threats of Sharia law here. I know there are communities around the country where there's a concentration of Muslim population. Maybe that's a different conversation in those communities, but I've not seen anything like that here in South Dakota. But anyway, now both Jackley and Krebs have told the Argus Leader that they were there just very briefly, 10 or 15 minutes, and they didn't listen to the speeches. I don't know if that's true or not. Initially, they wouldn't comment to the Rapid City Journal at all. It's interesting that they felt compelled to attend and say hello to people who were there, but then once it gets reported in the media, now they want to downplay their participation. So I'm not sure what it all means or what the debate, how long the debate will go on over this.
Jonathan, the Argus Leader, got some specifics from the candidates?
Yeah, I mean, as Denise said, they indicated that they were there for the Family Heritage event to shake some hands, say hi, make contacts with members of that organization, which, again, as Denise, I'm just reiterating what she said, but it's a very socially conservative group that has managed to influence the political process at the legislature and peers, so they've wielded some political power. So, you know, it would be natural if you're running in a Republican primary to probably reach out to them. But they did indicate to us that they had not actually hung around and listened to any of the speeches that were criticized.
Do you think it's significant, Jonathan? I mean, does someone who's, obviously they both hold positions in state government now, and they're all both looking at their campaigns in the future, does it matter? Should they be held accountable for where they show up? I mean, how much research do they need to do before they show up somewhere? Do they need to make a statement about what they felt about everything?
You know, I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about the organization that was criticized. Okay. I will say this, though, that the Southern Poverty Law Center, which has branded them a hate organization, whatever, the Southern Poverty Law Center borders on not being a very legitimate organization in my mind either. I mean, just because they say it doesn't mean it's necessarily true. The Southern Poverty Law Center, in my mind, basically would, anyone to the around Mitt Romney, if you want to put him on the political spectrum, to them that's somebody who should be watched for hate. So the Southern Poverty Law Center is extremely left wing, and so in my mind, just because they say something doesn't mean it's true.
All right, let's shift gears and talk about sales tax revenue and some of the things that are impacting even the city of Sioux Falls, which is sort of known recently for growth. Jonathan, what's going on with Mayor Mike Huther, and how is he responding to some of the sales tax numbers in the city?
Well, it's sluggish, and we're seeing we're still seeing some growth, but it's certainly the lowest growth since we hit the recession, and that would have been near the end of Dave Munson's kind of his final year or two in office, and that's, we're getting on about 8 years ago. So, the mayor has had to tell his department heads to start trimming expenses, they're not going to hit the goals that they had, and so that means that the department heads are going to have to start looking at places where they can save money. It's the typical drill that governments have to go through. I think Governor Dugard has been doing the same thing at the state level. They're trying to find where they can save some money now, so that they can meet the balance the budget.
Denise, it rolls down to all of us in a way. The state tax revenue being slow, or is this just a standard conversation that we always tend to have?
So interesting. One of the people I met at Dusty Johnson's event this morning was a woman who'd gone to school with him in Mitchell. And she's now the West River representative for the South Dakota Retailers Association. And she was talking to Kevin Wooster and I about how she believes that the political climate and the uncertainty over all the circus that's happening in Washington, and even the uncertainty that was happening last summer during the campaign, she was attributing the soft tourism season that we've had, the low sales tax revenue. She's hearing from her retailer members that people are uncertain, people are not making moves to expand, to do anything because of the political climate, which was extraordinary to me. I had never thought to consider that, but she was, I said, really, it's really all on the lap of the political climate. And she said, yes, people are just nervous.
Like in a nebulous way, like, oh, the climate's stressing me out, or in a specific way, like they're waiting for something to happen?
The term she used was uncertainty, and I should back up. She also said the energy, the downturn in the energy sector in North Dakota and Wyoming was a factor. The ag economy is a factor. But the top thing on the list was the political climate. And I was just really struck by that. And it's so squishy, you can't know for sure what's driving people's decisions. But just the fact that she was hearing that from individual retailers was really interesting to me.
It's so squishy. Thank you for saying it's so squishy. That's going to be our new word. Is it squishy or is it firmed up yet? That's what we want to know. Another squishy topic, Jonathan. You want to talk about Dana Ferguson and what you're reporting this week in the Argus Leader? You can find those articles that Jonathan Ellis writes on ArgusLeader.com, and sort of covering another reporter in this one. Can you give us an overview?
Yeah, I mean, we don't do that very often, no. But in this situation, you know, Dana was subpoenaed by the Attorney General's office to testify and an upcoming trial on Eric Hagen, who was the executive who was helping the Flandreau tribe with their marijuana resort, I guess it was. So she was subpoenaed. She had attended, you know, Dana covers state politics, as your listeners know, because she's frequently on with you. And she covered a tour that the tribe had given to lawmakers. And so she, for whatever reason, they decided to call her as a witness. She was subpoenaed. That's unusual, and certainly we thought that was newsworthy, so we wrote a story, and then we learned earlier this week that they've decided to abandon that subpoena, if that's the right name. They're not going to call her now. There's still a chance, however, that she might get called by a defense, so, you know, we'll see. It means that, unfortunately, for Dana, who's covered this this for a couple of years now, that she can't cover it now because she's become part of the story. And so, I mean, unfortunate for her, she can't cover the trial now. So I'll cover the trial instead. But I feel bad for her because it had been her news story over the years. And now because she got kind of dragged into it, we just feel that she probably can't actually cover it.
Denise, how significant is this conversation about reporters and sort of being dragged into the story in this way?
Well, and this has happened before, but it has been several years, and so I was stretching back in my memory banks trying to remember, and I can't remember the specific case, but I do remember a reporter getting called to the stand to read their article that had been published. And there are lines here, so what's been published in the paper versus are they going to go after your notes? And in this day and age now, your emails and all the other digital communications that you might have. I think it can get pretty dicey in terms of your relationship with your sources and what attorneys can reach into and get. I've never seen them be able to get in and get notes, but I'm sure there are many attorneys who would like to try in many different cases to see what they actually made it into publication versus all the other information you gathered along the way.
Do either of you, have an understanding of what the shield laws are in South Dakota as compared to other states? Jonathan, have you been looking into that to put it into context?
There is not a shield law per se in South Dakota. There is a court decision, and it's based on a 1995 Supreme Court decision in which the Supreme Court did say that there was privilege under some qualified privilege. I believe I could be wrong, and I get yelled at if I am, but I think that they maybe used the First Amendment qualified privilege in civil cases. And I think there's a footnote specifically that says it doesn't necessarily that doesn't refer to criminal cases, although it could. So there's this one Supreme Court ruling, to my understanding, but that is about it, and so there's not really much out there.
Well, what should we close with? Should we close with crowdsourcing the border wall there in Sioux Falls, Jonathan? Do you want to Somebody has a creative solution for this, and it's right there in South Dakota. What do you think?
Is anyone writing a check on this? I mean, do we know about that?
Terry LaFleur is the name I have of Sioux Falls. Dana Ferguson wrote the article. I've pulled it up on my computer here. So, and his idea is to crowdsource fund to build President Donald Trump's border wall.
Right, and he, again, I think in their first full week, she had reported that they hadn't actually raised any money yet. but I think he'd indicated that he believes it's, you know, the patriotic duty of everybody to try to help protect the sovereignty of the country, and in his mind that would mean building a wall and helping out the president. I think he was critical of Congress for not passing the funding to get it done. So he's taking it upon himself. He and I think the volunteers who are, I think there was a board or whatever, are going to try to raise the money and start building this thing brick by brick.
Denise, it's like a financial ballot initiative.
In a way it is. I wonder if the first check wouldn't come from Donald Trump himself.
Maybe.
He's the most passionate about this issue and has a bigger bank account than most people. It is an interesting test of all those supporters, the people who went to the rally and cheered. If they can become aware of this, would they put their money where their mouth is? I don't know. I'd be curious to see how this goes.
It speaks to the frustration of any topic that you feel should have moved forward by now, but maybe hasn't, whatever that topic is. Sort of taking things into your own hands.
Yes.
Interesting stuff. All right, Denise Ross from Rapid City, one of our Dakota political junkies, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jonathan Ellis, ArgusLeader.com. You can find his work there. He's a reporter and columnist from Sioux Falls, Argus Leader newspaper. Thanks, Jonathan.
Hey, thank you, Lori.